Welcome to The Investment Conversation, Lord Abbett's ongoing podcast series.
This is Will Andrews, digital editor for Lord Abbett. Joining me again is Lord Abbett investment strategist Tim Paulson, a specialist in fixed income. Tim, last time our discussion, you helped clear up some misconceptions about active management. And I was really intrigued by the idea of skill versus luck and how that informs manager performance. Can you give us a bit more color around that?
This is the fundamental question around active management. Of course, the accusation from those who really want to attack active management is that all outperformance is coming from luck. The complication here is that, of course, there is always an element of luck in assessing, well, it's always an element of luck in the outcome of every decision. No one has perfect knowledge of the future. Even the best decisions can have something completely unpredictable go wrong. So really, the goal of every manager is to minimize the imposition of luck in outperformance. And of course, the goal of everyone who assesses active management is to try and filter what is skill and what is luck.
So how can managers make better decisions then? And you tackle this question in a white paper that will be published soon on lordabbett.com.
Well, I think the key really is in two areas. The first is to identify areas where skill is more likely to be relevant. And the second is, of course, to take into consideration how to mitigate the potential for luck to impact a decision. In general, when we talk about skill, we mentioned before at an earlier podcast that the two real preconditions are the existence of inefficiencies in the market and then some kind of skill or information advantage that the manager has, and of course the ability to implement that, to do something about that market inefficiency.
Well, I think we'd all like to have an information advantage. How can a manager develop one when examining portfolio moves?
Not a trivial thing, much easier said than done. But generally speaking, again, what we're talking about with inefficiencies is either an ability to implement something before the market has fully priced in the information, or some kind of knowledge advantage. Now, very efficient markets, take something like U.S. interest rates, it's very difficult to generate a knowledge advantage. So usually a manager who's looking to generate a true information advantage is going to have to go into less scrutinized areas, areas that may not have as much focus from a lot of other investments. Typically these will correct over time as more scrutiny comes in or as valuations normalize. So there is certainly a time element to this. And again, the way one builds then an information advantage is focusing on areas with this potential for some kind of inefficiency, and then putting as much resource and focus as they can on generating as much information advantage as they can over the rest of the world.
One of your papers features a rather impressive looking equation for something called an information ratio. Can you boil that down for us? What is it and why is that important?
Well, this is commonly referred to as the fundamental theorem of active management, and an information ratio is an attempt to quantify the value add in decision making that a manager has, versus the amount of risk that they're introducing. It's not really fair to pile on a bunch of risk and say, hey, look, I've outperformed. In general, you're supposed to get higher returns with taking a lot of risk. So an information ratio really attempts to filter out how much of this performance is coming from extra risk and how much is coming from luck versus how much is true skill. And all this formula does is tell us that an information ratio is going to come from our information advantage, our information coefficient, times the breadth of the decisions we make.
So, and you talk about breadth. Why is it better for managers to make more decisions than fewer? Is there some sort of statistical safety in numbers, if you will, about breadth?
Well, it's less about a safety in numbers. There's certainly statistical advantage. But, the idea of breadth here is that, again, we're trying to minimize the impact of luck on a portfolio. If we have some kind of true information advantage, let's call it a statistical advantage, we still have imperfect knowledge of the future. There will always be some uncertainty the way things play out. But the more decisions we have in a portfolio, discrete, differentiated decisions, the more likely that our advantage is going to look, that our performance will look like our advantage. I hesitate to make a casino metaphor because, of course, there's too much suggestion that investment is just gambling. Of course, successful investing, in my mind, has nothing to do with gambling. It's very, very calculated, methodical. But the common refrain is that the house always wins. The reason the house always wins is because they have a small advantage, but that advantage is implemented across thousands, hundreds of thousands of individual bets. Over time, that advantage materializes and manifests as exactly their advantage. A casino would never want to have the outcome of their night or their year rest on one wager. Again, the idea, all breadth is doing is diversifying the possibilities and allowing over time this law of large numbers. If you have enough decisions in a portfolio, over time, performance will look like the information advantage.
Tim, what should a manager focus on in order to get a better information ratio?
Well, again, information ratio purports to be a metric that tells us about skill versus luck in a return profile. And really, again, this comes down to two things. A manager needs to have an information advantage, but the key is that you can't have an information advantage without inefficiencies. So a manager needs to be focused on areas that have the potential for inefficiencies. They need skill in those areas, so they need real expertise, but they also need breadth. What can happen too often is that a manager might focus in one particular area, maybe quite myopically, and over time the inefficiencies go away. So a manager is going to need resources to shift as the inefficiencies in the market may move, but then stay focused on areas where there's potential for real inefficiencies so that that skill advantage comes into play. So again, you need skill in the form of an information advantage where there are inefficiencies and breadth.
Tim, you've talked about decisions that add value and those that don't. What makes a quality decision for an investment portfolio?
Well, again, the number one goal is to focus on added value from skill and reduce the impact of luck on a portfolio. So we've talked about the basic prerequisites of needing some level of inefficiency in the markets. We've talked about the need to have some skill in recognizing and monetizing those inefficiencies, but there are still other ways of reducing the impact of luck also. There's the idea of breadth, again, where you want to have a lot of decisions, kind of let the law of large numbers work for you. But also, it's really important to reduce the overall impact of luck on every single decision. If we think about something like interest rates, there are any number of possible exogenous factors that can impact the outcome. So you might have some real insight. It might be trivialized by all of the different other unpredictable factors. So the key here is to focus on an analysis between two similar things, two shipping companies where factors that may impact the shipping industry may affect both equally. And so you can really focus on differences between the two and let your analysis really shine.
So when you make that comparison, how do you really determine where the value lies?
Well, I love that you said the word value there. Well, because the common term for this kind of analysis is relative value. And certainly it's not the only way to add value in a portfolio. We can look at, for example, the valuation of an asset given the way the markets seem to be pricing some economic outlook, what have you, but where you find the most frequent types of dislocations are looking at one asset versus a similar asset and saying there's a pricing differential, there's a value differential. And so a process that focuses on these relative value differentials is much more likely to be skill-driven in outcome than luck-driven.
Let's take it back to 90 Hudson then. How does Lord Abbott approach this?
Well, starting with the idea of skill, and again, we've been doing this for many, many decades, the idea again, how does one construct an information advantage? To us, that means we want to have deep knowledge of a given asset class with a lot of analytical rigor behind it so that we can know everything about relative value within that particular asset class, that we understand all the dynamics, the technicals, the underlying fundamentals. But there's another key piece of information, which is one asset class pricing in something different from another? So the idea is we want to have multiple experts in multiple areas, but then we want to have some information bridge. So we build a lot of, we call it internally collaboration. This is just the connective tissue that really forces the exchange of information, facilitates and forces this exchange of information from all of these individual experts, so that they can act not only on what they're seeing, but be informed by what's happening in a different asset class. This also lends itself very well to multi-sector or multi-asset kinds of decisions because we become very efficient at comparing differentials in pricing across asset classes. And it may not be a sector versus sector comparison, but even a specific asset within a different asset class. But again, the idea here is how do you build an information advantage? You got to have an expert in a certain area. You want to add this connective networking capability so that people have more information flooding into them. We build a lot of quantitative tools that add an independent third-party perspective. We'll source outside experts in areas that we may think we're less familiar with, or just to get a perspective of someone who may not be there. But again, everything focused on how do we generate an information advantage? How do we have as much information as possible in areas where there's this potential for inefficiency? And then, by the way, being able to look across multiple asset classes helps greatly increase the breadth of the potential decision making. We can look across asset classes and we don't have to be limited to one particular area or become overly myopic.
This sounds like an extremely sensible approach, and you sort of wonder why more managers don't take this. Why isn't everyone doing this?
Well, I believe that the world is certainly trending in that direction. If there's a real value from what's happened with academic research and this kind of the framework that it's helped bring to light for active management, it again has really helped emphasize that we shouldn't be focusing on very efficient areas in the marketplace, that there's just too much potential. Even if we are incredibly skilled investors in those areas, so much of the return profile in those areas is going to be driven by luck and not by skill. It can just overwhelm whatever incremental returns we can generate. However, it is a tendency, and I will admit this, in general, investment managers tend to have a little bit of ego in there. They tend to be very bright people, they're very skilled, and it can be very tempting to think that they have knowledge where maybe the markets are already pretty darn efficient. And so what we find is having that external rigor of confining our decision-making only to areas where we really believe internally that there is the potential for that value add has helped to focus us, to keep our attention very much focused, our resources very much focused on those places where we can have the advantage. I think, Will, if you look, you know, we've talked about generally the outflows from active management. We haven't had that experience here at Lord Abbott. We've seen steady inflows over the last few years. And I believe this is just the market really kind of forcing this discipline on the world of active management. Successful strategies and successful managers are thriving, but other managers are being forced to reassess where are they adding value, what type of approach works. I think you see too many strategies out there that will take smart managers making informed decisions in area of real skill and then also adding in decisions in areas where they may have less skill or where things may be much more efficient. And that ends up watering down the results with a very significant element of luck.
That's a great, way to almost wrap up. I've got one more thing for you. Say we've got a 40-story elevator ride with you. How would you sum up your findings on active management before the door is open? You know, and you can take 50 stories if you want.
50 stories. Thank you, Will. Very generous of you. Very high level. A lot of the concerns around active management have been rooted in academia, and they've been very helpful in allowing us and others to help filter out the fact that there are certain types of value-added decisions and certain types of decisions that are less value-add. Some of the criticism of active management is very misguided. It has been shaped by some bias research. Again, this is a spectrum of gray. There's not a binary black and white that active is good or bad. Really, the finding is that active can add a lot of value in certain areas. And in order to best extract that value from active management, we need to have a manager with skill who's putting their focus in those kinds of areas, taking a disciplined approach to only those kinds of areas, and who really has the resources to have real breadth of decision making, to not be so myopically focused on one certain area that the inefficiencies go away, but they continue to chase it.
Thanks, Tim. Learned a lot, and I'm sure our audience did too.
Thank you, Will.
That's it for this edition of The Investment Conversation. Please drop us a line on social media or visit our website at lordabbott.com. Our audio podcasts are available on iTunes, Spotify, TuneIn, and other major streaming media services. Thanks for listening. Investing involves risk, including the loss of principal. The value of investments in fixed income securities will change as interest rates fluctuate and in response to market movements. Generally, when interest rates rise, the prices of debt securities fall, and when interest rates fall, prices generally rise. The municipal market can be affected by adverse tax, legislative, or political changes, and by the financial condition of the issuers of municipal securities. Investments in foreign or emerging market securities may be adversely affected by economic, political, or regulatory factors and subject to currency volatility and greater liquidity risk. The value of investments in equity securities will fluctuate in response to general economic conditions and to changes in the prospects of particular companies and/or sectors in the economy. No investing strategy can overcome all market volatility or guarantee future results. Market forecasts and projections are based on current market conditions and are subject to change without notice. Projections should not be considered a guarantee. The views and opinions expressed by the Lord Abbott speaker are those of the speaker as of the date of the broadcast and do not necessarily represent the views of the firm as a whole. Any such views are subject to change at any time based upon market or other conditions, and Lord Abbott disclaims any responsibility to update such views. This material is not intended to be relied upon as a forecast, research, or investment advice. It is not a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any securities or to adopt any investment strategy. Neither Lord Abbott nor the Lord Abbott speaker can be responsible for any direct or incidental loss incurred by applying any of the information offered. The information provided is not directed at any investor or category of investors and is provided solely as general information about Lord Abbott's products and services and to otherwise provide general investment education. None of the information provided should be regarded as a suggestion to engage in or refrain from any investment-related course of action, as neither Lord Abbott nor its affiliates are undertaking to provide impartial investment advice, act as an impartial advisor, or give advice in a fiduciary capacity. If you are an individual retirement investor, contact your financial advisor or other fiduciary about whether any given investment idea, strategy, product, or service may be appropriate for your circumstances. This broadcast is the copyright 2019 of Lord Abbott & Company, LLC. All rights reserved. This recording may not be reproduced in whole or in part or any form without the permission of Lord Abbott. Lord Abbott Mutual Funds are distributed by Lord Abbott Distributor, LLC.